Well, according to what I've seen, I'm on chapter 21 of Epiphany. It's been an interesting week, to say the least. As you may recall from last week, I was in the process of moving, and I am finally moved over to the new house. We're about 10, 15 miles north of where we used to be, up in a little town called Princeton, Texas. Not Princeton, West Virginia, not Princeton, New Jersey, but Princeton, Texas. Biggest draw here, I guess, it's on the verge of Audie Murphy country. That's a little bit east of us on U.S. Highway 380. It's also, what is that? German prisoners were kept here during World War II. They would go out and work the fields for farmers. No one really ever escaped because of Texas being so big. They wouldn't know where the heck they needed to go anyway in order to get out of the United States. It was a lot easier than trying to escape, say, from Germany back at that time. Anyway, we're going to be up at chapter 21. If you remember last week on chapter 20, we're talking, Emily came up with a plan to help Debbie Wallace out of a situation where she was going to be proposed to out of somebody, off to somebody who she really didn't want to get married to for her own reasons. Chapter 21, we're actually picking up from where Dan and Beasley were going and sneaking out towards a campsite, trying to hide from the sheriff, and they were stopped by a voice telling them that, hey, come on out, we know where you are. So here's chapter 21. Dan's heart started beating again when he realized that the voice commanding them to come out of hiding belonged to James Hamner. "You two all right?" he asked as they emerged from the underbrush. "I think you might have scared him out of a year's growth," Beasley stated, pointing at Dan. "Well, I take it you didn't tell him about the chip in your backpack," James said. "Well, we're good for an hour or so at least. Sheriff has his men looking for you over near Blackwater Falls." "So we get to go back?" Dan queried. "Not quite yet," James told him. "I have some fresh supplies and a camp set up at Red Creek. You'll be sharing a camper with a couple of agents who'll act as cover when the sheriff heads this way again. When they break camp, you'll hike over to the western trailhead of the Blackbird Knob Trail. I believe I can have you cleared by the time we pick you up the day after tomorrow." "Well, why can't we just stay at the campground for the next few days?" Dan asked. "Because the sheriff suspects that there's something fishy going on. He's checked out the campground a half dozen times so far today and will most likely continue to watch until our agents pack up and get out of here in the morning." "So I suppose that means I'll have you for another 48 hours or so, eh, preacher?" Beasley gave Dan a wink. James pretended not to notice while urging the pair to get a move on. "By the way, I talked with your wife this morning," James told Dan while he was helping load the gear into the back of his SUV. "She says not to worry. She was thinking of coming out here herself, but we told her not to. Sheriff might see fit to take her as hostage." "That's ridiculous," Dan sneered. "Why would a sheriff do such a thing?" "To get a hold of you, that's why. He's dead set on proving that you're the firebug we've been looking for so he can get hired on as an agent for the Bureau." "He's been trying to get that job ever since he was elected," Beasley added. "James and I are starting to think that the perpetrator, at least in this case, has a personal tie-in. He might be looking for someone convenient on which to pin the blame." "Our larger investigation, the one involving the series of similar church burnings, involves a drifter who's been seen in the general area of the burnings," James resumed. "Beasley's drawing of the person you described has been shown to a number of our field agents and several dozen witnesses as well. And, well, both of you seem to have nailed it. Going through military records, we've identified the suspect as Charles Peter Clark. He was an Army demolitions expert in Afghanistan." Agent Hamner closed the back end of the vehicle. "We need to get you down the road and get you dropped off," he told the pastor. "The agents at the campground will fill you in on Mr. Clark." He urged Dan and Beasley to get in for the short drive to the campground. They arrived to find three small recreational vehicles parked in close proximity to each other. Greeting them were a couple resembling Dan and Beasley in as far as their general appearance. They were introduced as Gary Platt and Pam Walker. After introductions were made and gear unloaded, Agent Hamner left to continue his part of the investigation. The foursome settled down to get to know each other over lunch. Agent Platt had come up from the field office in Tennessee. Like Dan, he played football while he was in high school. His wife, like Emily, was at one time a teacher. They were expecting their second child. Pam Walker worked out of Erie, Pennsylvania, where she lived with her mother in a small menagerie of animals. She had been recently divorced and was quite happy to be out in the wilderness away from her ex. After exchanging background stories, the couples collaborated on preparing Dan and Beasley for their hike the following morning. They started by making sure that Dan and Beasley were wearing the same outfits as Gary and Pam. Less than 5 minutes after coordinating outfits, Agent Plant and Beasley went out on the road and were spotted by Deputy Rusty Collier. He slowed and stopped, giving the couple a once-over. Where's your friend, Beasley? The deputy asked. The name's not Beasley, Gary came back quickly as he could. I told you earlier my name is Platt, P-L-A-T-T. I was addressing the woman, Deputy Collier shot back. I'd like to see some identification, if you don't mind. It hasn't changed since this morning, Beasley told the deputy. I didn't think I need ID just to go for a little walk. Well, the deputy insisted on accompanying them back to the campsite to retrieve their identification. Thankfully, when they arrived, Dan and Agent Walker were nowhere to be seen. Beasley went into the camper, hoping to find something to satisfy the deputy's curiosity. Luckily, she found a pair of IDs on a counter next to the kitchenette. I still say you two are the spitting image of a couple we're looking for, Deputy Collier finally conceded. He accompanied the pair back to the trailhead before heading back toward the north end of the sods. They waited 10 minutes before sticking their heads back out on the road and beating a hasty retreat back to the camper where Dan and Agent Walker were waiting for them. I think I've been made, Beasley declared when they returned. Bets that the sheriff and the state police will be up here inside of the hour, giving this place a thorough going over. Stevens and I need to get out of here. Both couples worked at a feverish pace to get packed and out of camp before the law arrived. When they left, they did some bushwhacking to get to the trail without having to resort to going back out on the main road. It was surmised that Deputy Collier at least would be watching the road after notifying his superiors. For the second time that day, Dan donned a backpack and ended up following Beasley to the trail. They took a brief break to cover their tracks before continuing their journey to another part of to another trailhead at the top of the Canaan Valley. The four of them hiked together another hour, then parted company. We're headed back to the trailer, Agent Platt explained. The deputy saw earlier assumed that we were on a day hike. If they're sending people out to question us, then it will look just as if we're coming back. Agent Platt and Walker left Dan and Beasley alone. They walked on for another half an hour before stopping again. Probably won't hurt to change clothes before we go any further, Beasley told the pastor. If there's an air search, our shirts would literally shout out our position and intent. The move made sense to Dan. The pair changed into khaki shirts, putting the plaids they had been wearing into the backpacks before moving on. They continued at a fair pace, arriving at a primitive campsite where they'd be spending the night. Beasley had Dan put up the small tent they were toting, a task he accomplished with supervision and instruction from her. You've never done this, had you? Beasley queried once the tent and the camp had been set. I would think someone your age would have at least had a family camping trip or two under your belt by now. My idea of roughing is to be stay at a cheap hotel instead of something like a Holiday Inn, he replied. The ground is hard, the noises are, well, a challenge, and what happens if it rains like it looked like it might? Well, if it rains, you get wet, and you're less likely to get a hot meal, Beasley told him. In some instances, you can scoop out dirt to better conform to your sleeping position. Says so in the Boy Scout handbook. I don't suppose you've ever been a Boy Scout, have you? Dan shook his head. Dad tried to get me interested, but at that point in my life, I preferred playing football. Beasley just shook her head. Surely your wife would have gone camping, right? No, not that I know of. Well, when we're finished with this trek, I might just invite myself over to your place and teach you both, she snorted. Dan wondered how Emily would react to going camping, especially with the kids. He expressed concern about the lack of privacy and a lack of facilities. What we're doing is primitive camping. Unless your family is extremely close, I wouldn't suggest it, Beasley expanded. There are plenty of public campgrounds out there where you can pitch a large tent and be close to bathrooms. No, not pit toilets, but real bathrooms with flush toilets and showers. Just after eating a light supper, a summer shower slipped into camp. Dan and Beasley hustled to put their backpacks under cover before getting under cover themselves. Dan was soaked to the bone. His clothes clung to him, making him cold. Beasley stripped off what she wore with little concern about the pastor sharing her tent. After laying her clothes out to dry, she fished around in her backpack and produced a small bar of soap, which she took out into the rain. Dan turned the other way. He wasn't interested in watching Beasley take her impromptu shower. You're an idiot if you don't come out here and take advantage of what nature provided, Beasley called in after less than a minute. I would appreciate it if you were to clean up, even just a bit. Body odors are worse in close quarters. He reluctantly decided that she was right. His clothes came off, and he joined his guide. Dan turned to either hide his body or to avoid seeing hers. She handed him her soap so he could clean off the effects of a day's worth of hiking. When he finished, he turned to see that she was still there, naked and unashamed, watching him. He was surprised that her appearance did not arouse him. What did strike him was her vulnerability. Dan had every advantage over the woman standing in front of him. He was taller, heavier, and presumably stronger than she was. She, on the other hand, knew where she was and where they were going. Without her, he would be lost, likely prey to whatever lurked out there in the West Virginia wilderness. In a larger sense, they were equally vulnerable. Clouds parted. The rain stopped. Rays from the westering sun illuminated them as if to make a point. We are but mere specks, vulnerable to the world around us, as the world around us is small and vulnerable to the rest of the universe. Dan started to mouth his thoughts. We are huge in relation to the seeds of life within us, he continued. Surely there is a higher power. There is a higher power, Beasley spoke out loud. We know this. How we define the higher power is how we define ourselves. You know what I'm thinking? Dan asked. No, but I can read your lips and I can make a pretty good guess, she smiled. We should bring our wet things out and let them dry in what little sunlight we have left today. They hurriedly carried out her suggestion. They waited in the tent until the last vestiges of light were about to disappear before gathering their clothes and packing them back into their packs. Beasley went on into the tent as she had on the previous night, while Dan decided to stay outside to watch the spectacle of stars appearing once the clouds disappeared. He stood in awe of the heavens, this time working out his place in the cosmos, figuring out his place in the mind of God. Voices interrupted his meditation. Two of them, somewhat loud, flashlights sweeping the ground in front of him as they drew nearer.
Beasley! Someone's coming, Dan hissed into the tent.
She was up and out of her sleeping bag in an instant. After a quick review of the situation, she pulled Dan along to a vantage point just beyond the boundary of the campsite. The sweeping lights barely missed illuminating the campers.
Well, looky here, one of the voices exclaimed. Looks like someone's out camping.
Quiet, the other voice demanded.
Dan's grip on Beasley tightened. A brief flash from one of the lights revealed the man suspected of the arson blamed on the young pastor. The voice demanding quiet belonged to Tucker County Sheriff Pinkerman.
Next week, chapter 22, and we should be moving on. I do have about 27 chapters so far, and I am writing on the end of the book, so we'll see what happens as we continue with the folks here at Epiphany. In the meantime, I think with more than used amount of time I should be using, almost 15 minutes worth today, we appreciate your support and your kind patronage.
In the meantime, author B.D. Harrell from Princeton, Texas, be seeing you.